The perfect song to end the year on. It's the end of the season. We have number 8, the Hall of Famer, Steve Young, on. The Olympics are on. And in case anybody had forgotten, let's all remember this. Bon Jovi just hit the ripcord and let Steve Young go solo in front of millions. Fantastic.
He's a New York Giants fan.
Hello, Steve.
20-year anniversary. I thought you'd appreciate that one.
Is that what it is? 20 years? Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep. That was my I sang to more people than really anyone. I mean, even the Super Bowl. I think the Winter Olympics worldwide. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about it.
Eminem this weekend. I think I got him beat.
You know what? I don't think there's any doubt about it. My only misgiving was that immediately after that, I didn't go buy stock in Miracle Ear, because I'm sure sales just went right through the roof.
Well, I'm bummed that they didn't tell me, because then I would at least try. Like, I was so shocked, I quit. Like, I was like, I want to just at least yell it, you know, or do something fun. I mean, I just panicked.
You know what you were, Steve? You know what you were? You were the secondary receiver that didn't run his route hard.
Exactly. He was like, he didn't think he was going to get the ball. What, you, me? Yeah. Me?
Hit you in the side of the helmet and you're good to go. Hey, before we get into the game, I did appreciate the very end, little Steve Kerr shout out from you.
Well, yeah, because I think we've talked about this. If I haven't, I really regret it. You know, Steve was able to create an environment where you could have superstars show up, but the environment was selflessness, right? It was like, and that's hard to do. People usually, that breaks down in pro football, pro basketball. And he, because of Steph, because of Draymond, because of the personalities in the locker room and Steve's encouragement, you had these superstars all playing selflessly, and it was, you couldn't stop them. You can't stop superstar players playing selflessly. Can't do it. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Warriors won. And at the end of the game on Sunday, you know, we talked about this. You know, they went all in, bought a Super Bowl, or they got all these players: Von Miller, OBJ, you know, Matthew Stafford. Okay, but usually that's in basketball, it's starting to work more often. But in football, it never works. Too many guys. You can get a bunch of guys, the locker room breaks down, people can't stay together, there's not much leadership. That's why I admired it, and that's why I made the comment. Whatever it was, you can say anything you want about Sean McVay, he was able to bring in Hall of Fame players and just throw them in and mix them up and come out with something. And that's what hit me when I was listening to, when I was interviewing Aaron Donald and Von Miller at the end of the game. Those two had an element of love for each other. Like, they were brothers in a matter of 3 or 4 months. Now, great, you know, it happens. I mean, obviously you get a little go after the Super Bowl. Mm. But that's how you felt about it, and that's the way they talked about it for a while. And that's what Matthew Stafford told me before the playoffs started. You don't understand. Our locker room is together. We're not confused. We have indigestion. But as far as the spirit of our play, that's what – and so I made the comment at the end that Sean McVay has done what Steve Kerr did in basketball, which I thought was impossible to do in football, which more so will happen now in football, because football is like the NBA. It's so wide open, and that you can do that. You can just gather guys, as long as you have a great culture, you can go win Super Bowls. And I think that's going to – every team is now going to try to do what the Rams have done.
And you know, the interesting part of it was kind of similar to the Warriors. I mean, it's not – it's a little apples and oranges a little bit, is that when they brought in Kevin Durant, they already had the nucleus of the team, and most of those guys were drafted. You know, Bogut before him was a trade. And they brought in guys who were kind of toward the end of their careers that came in and wanted to win a championship. But you're right, selflessness was a huge key. And I thought at the end of the Rams game when I was watching it, out of all the people they brought in, and they wouldn't have won it probably without at least 70-80% of those guys they brought in. And they brought in a lot of guys. I mean, Ramsey, OBJ, Von Miller, Stafford, they traded for, that it was the two guys that they drafted The two guys, the two superstars on their team that they drafted, were the ones that managed to get the job done. Kupp on offense and Aaron Donald on defense.
And they and what's amazing about both of those guys is when you meet them and talk to them, they don't look the part. You know, Cooper Kupp is like Eastern Washington. He's like, good to be there. Hey, let's just go run some routes. Let's talk some football. Like, his superstardom is going to, like, shock him.
You know? Well, it did when he was on the podium and, you know, accepting or being told that he was the MVP. He couldn't believe it. And he seemed almost embarrassed by the fact that he was the best player on the field that day, offensively.
I think he's like, well, Matthew, why not? And I think that's the spirit of why teams are great when you add these guys. And I think Aaron and Cooper were the leaders in the locker room that held together with a bunch of other guys, so that they had created this. And what was amazing is the Rams have historically not been the grittiest group. Mm-hmm. And I think that this season they weren't the grittiest group. But after the loss to the 49ers, you think about the Cardinals, Bucks, and the championship game against the 49ers, that's what they became. And they had to grind through the – look, when Cooper Kupp caught the touchdown to go up and they missed the extra point 13-3, the Bengal defense was lost. They were baffled. Every play was something different. They were trying to come up with some combination and try to slow down the machine that was OBJ fully integrated in this offense with Cooper Kupp and Cam and all in the backs. And it felt like the slaughter was on. And then when OBJ went down, suddenly it allowed that defense to now go man and mean it. And they didn't have an answer, and it really slowed things down for a couple of quarters. And then they had to go grind it out. And I give Matthew Stafford and really that whole offense, that drive was not pretty. But fourth down, how about fourth down on your own side with 3.5 minutes left, and you go, you know what? It's now. The gut feeling of Sean McVay to put it all on the line. You can say you have 3 timeouts, you might get the ball back. I get it. But you give the ball up on your own 30 with 3.5 left down by 3, no bueno. But he had the gut feeling to give them the jet sweep, and they could make it, and Cooper Kupp put in his hands, and then they go grind it down all the way to the 1, and then they throw the fade to Cooper Kupp. I mean, it wasn't explosive, but they did it against the 49ers, and they did in the Super Bowl. They did what they had to do, and it was the grittiness that got them the Super Bowl.
I'll tell you, you know, I thought of the 94 Niners watching this Rams team this year because, you know, the Rams were all in. I mean, they, you know, after they added Ramsey and they added Stafford, I mean, mid-year they gave up a second and a third-round pick for Von Miller. Von Miller's a free agent right now. Those are two high picks, and it reminded me of 94 coming off of 93. You guys signed Norton, Dent, Plummer, Ricky Jackson, and Dion, and maybe a couple other guys, but those are the guys that stood out to me. And that 94 team was like, there was nothing short of winning the Super Bowl that was going to be viewed in any way as success. I mean, it was going to be a failure if you didn't win. I'm just kind of wondering if you think, is that a great mindset to have? This, like, we are all in this year, and if it's either a success or a nightmare.
Larry, I think that's how we thought about it all the years. Now, we knew the Cowboys and the way that it doesn't hard to figure out who's good in the league and who can, you know, who's great and who's trouble. And the Cowboy offense, with that offensive line and Emmett and with Michael and Troy, I mean, it was like, we got to figure out a way to keep him under 35. And so it was like, let's go figure out ways to keep him under 35. And so in that way, we're all in on that aspect of it. But there wasn't a year in the year 91 when we were 10-6 and didn't make the playoffs. It was a complete disaster because it was Super Bowl bust. There was no new news about 94 other than it's the Cowboys in this, the rise of that team that we hadn't seen for 15 years. I mean, in the NFC, there's been, you know, Giants here and there, Washington here and there, good teams, but nothing like these guys. And so suddenly, you know, erupting in 92, we got a problem. You know, Houston, we got a problem. and so that 94 was an answer to the problem that was existential to our ability to go win a Super Bowl. Because if you think to yourself, hey, let's be a playoff team. Okay, fine. Let's go build for that. or let's be a Super Bowl team. It's two different things. And I think that the 49ers, and I give Ed credit and Bill to build, and Joe to build the mentality that it's Super Bowl or bust. And I told you this a couple weeks ago. I love that because I think, look, if you don't make it, it's a disaster. Oh, yeah, but you still have context. You know, you're not overwrought. Like it, but in going for it, I used to say, look, if you want to throw six touchdowns, go for eight, right? I mean, you have to be all in. In 94, there's a great story that I've heard that I was a party to was Eddie going down the elevator in Texas Stadium in 93 after losing the championship game. Go, hey, no. The answer to that is no. And so how do we – they felt like they could score the points. They needed to find a way to hold them down. Mm. And that's why you got Ricky and you got Richard Dent trying to finish up. All those guys were finishing up their career other than Dion, trying to find a place to see if we could get some momentum to slowing down this – I mean, you know, this – what they were, right? 3 out of 4 years, Super Bowl. I mean, the Cowboys of 92, 96 were – You better go all in if you're going to beat those guys.
We are savoring our final hang with Steve Young. He's joining us on the UMA guest line. What the Bengals have not done in terms of protecting Matthew Stafford these last couple of seasons is bordered on the criminal. Do you think the Bengals will do what is necessary to fix their offensive line problems? So a guy who got his knee ripped up last year, sprained his MCL in the Super Bowl this year, being sacked 70 times over the course of the season. So hopefully that cannot happen again. Or are the Bengals whistling past the graveyard with this and they think they can get away with it?
Well, I mean, one thing's for sure. We know. and it's so obvious that it's going to be screamed in every corner. So, but I felt like the Packers after the Super Bowl they had in 13, what was the Packers year? I thought for 3 or 4 years they did not support Aaron Rodgers' offensive line the way that they needed to. Mm-hmm. And so you get a great football player, quarterback day. You should go. What you need a corner. You want four defensive linemen and you want an offensive line like it can a quarterback. Like you if you have the quarterback, go all in. And maybe you do it for a year, to your point. Like, let's just go all in for offensive line for a year. And let's see what we can get done. And then figure it out the next year. Figure it out the next year. Like, let's make – it is the NBA in some ways. Everyone tries to plan for long-term success in the NFL. And I don't know – it's not a bad thing to have long-term planning and also have, you know, some cap management. Mm-hmm. I get all that. But the Rams, I think, are going to change that to where it's like, if you had Joe Burrow, you get Ja'Marr Chase under rookie contracts – hello, let's go all in and make sure that they're protected. And I if they're not, Rod, then that's just foolishness. If we watch the Cincinnati Bengals, they come out next year and they play a few first games, not protecting Joe Burrow, you know, that's when you want to fire the general manager. That's when you fire the owner. But unfortunately, you can't fire the owner, which a lot of times is the problem, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And let's be honest with it. And there's a lot of situations where, you know, as far as competitive, razor-sharp competitiveness that is the NFL, it's the one weak link that the NFL has in making it so incredibly competitive is they're stuck with equity owners that don't move.
Okay, let's be pointed, or I'll be pointed. Mike Brown, who Paul Brown's son, who owns the Cincinnati Bengals.
You're trying to get me in trouble.
No, I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I'll just lay it out there.
I got drafted by them, and I want to go to the LA Express because I didn't want to go to the Bengals.
No. Well, see, that. Now, see that, that's you bringing up old stuff. I just want to bring up that Mike Brown has been notoriously one of the cheapest owners in the league, and where the Bengals, because obviously the salary cap is set, so you have to spend a certain amount of money, where the Bengals have been cheap. They've been cheap when it comes to free agency, and they've been cheap when it comes to scouting. They don't have the most robust scouting department. So when you are of that mind and you don't spend money, particularly in scouting, to talk about this, well, then all of a sudden you end up with an offensive line where you have guys who are just not adept at pass blocking. So I wonder, and I know you can't answer this, but Joe Burrow's physical health is on the line here with that bad offensive line. I mean, at some point in time, does he have to say something to get the Bengals, particular Mike Brown, to go, all right, I'll do what does not come naturally for me, which is I'll spend some money to make sure that my investment in my quarterback is not in vain.
I would tell him what I told Aaron Rodgers in 2012, I want to say, that my greatest regret, and I think we've talked about this before, my greatest regret was not speaking up and just staying, you know, in my lane. And not to be a problem, but to be an agitation to make sure that we're not drafting for some, you know, strange purpose, whether it's for, you know, a tool, you know, a specialty player, or like, look, give us linemen. Give us a lineman every year. Right. One a year in the first three rounds. Give me a lineman. Give me a lineman. If I was Joe Burrow, I would encourage him to agitate to make sure that those things happen, because he should know that he is now a Super Bowl type quarterback that needs to go win them if he can get the help. And he's got the receivers. He's got the coach. That's a big deal. You got the coach. You've got the receivers. You need the help up front, and then we'll go win some Super Bowls. And if you don't give it to me, you're going to hear, like, he needs to be in the room. I think Aaron Rodgers has earned the right to be in the room where it happens. And then the more that they share in that mentality with their superstar quarterbacks, people always say, oh, he's just another position. It's just another guy. Like, look, I don't want you to coddle quarterbacks, but let's be real about what the league is today and empower these guys that are the best in the league to go be great. Because what's for sure, Rod, is that you cannot do it alone, and you cannot do it with tons of good help. You better have a great owner, a great general manager, a great coach, and a really lot of help on the field, and then your greatness can come out. People always say, well, what happened to Matthew Stafford in Detroit? Well, he didn't have the help.
Yep.
So his greatness couldn't come out. You saw the elements of it. It bubbled up a lot to me. But now all of a sudden, what's the difference between Matthew Stafford? He's gotten the help, and now he's a Super Bowl champion, maybe a Hall of Fame player, because he got the help. So, Joe Burrow, go to help, because we won't know how great you are until you do.
Yep.
I got to ask you, the no-look pass, which was pretty cool, and you've talked about throwing to guys you haven't necessarily seen before, and we were talking to Greg Cosell about it, and I was like, I appreciated that pass, because he knew exactly where Bell was. Because he knew where Bell was, he knew where Kupp would be. And he knew he just had to make sure that Bell wasn't in the passing lane. So and we've talked about this before many years ago. We talked about not necessarily looking at the receiver, but looking at the defense, knowing where your receiver is going to be. And we kind of said it's kind of like, you know, you could close your eyes and walk from your couch to your kitchen because you've done it so many times. Just as long as somebody doesn't rearrange the furniture, you're good. So in that vein, you know where the furniture is. You've seen it over and over and over again. Have you done that before where you're just like, I know he's going to be here. I just need to make sure the defense isn't going to be there. So you're more, I've always thought a quarterback, like a really good quarterback, an advanced quarterback, doesn't have to see the receiver as much as he needs to know where the defense is going to be. And if the defense is where it should be and the receiver does what he's supposed to do, then it's just about getting to the ball to a certain point at a certain time.
Most quarterbacks are reactionary, right? They're like, they react. They get a defense, they see the play, they know the receiver, they're reacting, and they throw it. And that reaction is fine. But when you really start to own, and I always say the data, but to own the whole experience to where you're not reacting anymore, you're actually dictating a little bit, in that dictation, that's where those kind of plays come out of, because you're ahead of it. It's like you've already ingested all of the things that can happen with the blitz or can happen with this coverage or where guys are or where they're going or where it's already in you, right? And so now you're dictating. And I told the story with Darren Woodson, safety for the Cowboys, and we'd always have this fun game where, you know, I'd stare at him, after we retired, he's like, why do you always stare at me, you know? And I was like, well, because I knew that if you stared back, that you weren't going to blitz. And if you looked off, like you were trying to avoid me because I was staring at you, then I knew you were coming. You know, he's like, why? That's impossible. You know, like, but that's the fun stuff. When you're starting to be able to dictate to defenses, that's the cool stuff that just happens. I don't think Matthew said, oh, I'm going to throw without looking. I think it was a reaction to the moment, right? Mm-hmm. To the dictation of the moment, not a reaction. I guess it's a reaction, but it's because he's further ahead in all the stuff that's going on, where most players, quarterbacks, even the good ones in the NFL, never get to that place. And that's why I've always thought Matthew, he's too aggressive in some spots, but you get all the benefit of all that aggression. So it's hard to say don't do that. But one thing about Matthew is he is a phenomenal player and he's ahead of the game. And I'm just so excited for him that he got the help that he could show. Now do you not see Matthew Stafford different than a year ago? 100%, right?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
You had him pegged before, didn't you?
But no, I didn't have him pegged. That's why I wanted the Niners to get him.
Yeah, I just think that.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You now see the full measure of Matthew Stafford.
Yes.
Because he now got the help that Tom Brady has had, or Drew Brees had, or Aaron Rodgers has had, or Russell Wilson has had, both offensively and defensively. Like, yeah. He finally got it. He got the help that he needed.
And that, I would say, that is why. Then I know everyone has said, and I'm not going to say he's not, that Tom Brady is the best that's ever done it. And I always say, sure, give him the credit for what you've done. But quarterback is one of those positions. If you rearrange the deck chairs a little bit, everything could be completely different. Like, no one in their right mind can tell him, well, I guess they could be in their right mind, but I'm not going to listen, can tell me that Tom Brady is that much better than Dan Marino. Like, that you couldn't put Dan Marino into those situations and he wouldn't win. If Elway had a running game, that maybe they wouldn't. It just, quarterback is such a, I mean, you got to be really good to get to that level. And I think there's so many, and I think I'd include you in there as well. There's so many of those quarterbacks, or so few of those quarterbacks up there that have that type of talent. But if you have that type of talent, and if you have that type of work ethic, then there's just so much that happens that's out of your control. Who's calling the plays every year? What's your coach going to be like? Who are they drafting? We just talked about that. Are they helping you or are they hurting you? And for what reason are they doing those things? I mean, there are just so many things that come with the quarterback position that isn't just about winning. I know quarterbacks get credit for wins and losses, and that's one of my biggest pet peeves. It's like, it's such a team game that quarterbacks get the wins and the losses, and that makes no sense to me. But and there's so many quarterbacks I look at and go, boy, if they were in a different situation, I wonder what their career would have been like.
Well, and it goes generationally, too. I remember Roger Staubach, once we became friends, he told me once that, you know, his generation, and when he played, it was really about running the football on third and long and drop it back and try to make a play. And he said, I wish I would have played, you know, 15, 20 years later when the West Coast offense was around and a more expansive game and you get the ball out quickly and first down was a throwing down. And like he was, I don't want to say jealous, but he just thought that was so cool. And in a way, we all built off of his greatness, right? He and Terry Bradshaw, people before, and Joe, like, everyone builds off of what they've seen. And now the game today, you're seeing greatness that you never could have imagined, and the expansion of the game, because it's been built off of what Peyton Manning did, or, you know, or what Dan, like you mentioned. So it's like, you know, who's the greatest? I like greatest of a generation, because that's kind of like more apples to apples, because each generation builds up. We were talking the honors. We saw Brett Favre and Peyton Manning and different guys, and, you know, conversations all about what it would be like to play today. Like, it's like, you know, you hear me every week. I can't help it. I can't help but talk about rules that now protect quarterback and all the stuff that we talk about every week. You're not, again, it's not jealousy. It's just recognition of what an amazing time it could be to play quarterback today, and what the expansiveness of the game and what you can accomplish. It would be so much fun and all the kinds of things. And so wouldn't it be, but you can't, you're done. You're finished. You did your thing. Like, get out of the way. But I think when you start to talk about what a quarterback needs to be great and who's greater than who, it really becomes a function of, you know, what I honor is people who saw the guy, the greatness before, and did they extend on it? And that's the greatness that I really appreciate. And you saw Peyton and Tom do that in that generation, Drew Brees do that in this next generation, Aaron Rodgers. And so that's why I tip my cap to those guys, because you know, we had a pretty good thing going, and they extended on it. And that's amazing. Now I want to see Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and, like, build off of that. And that's going to be tough. I think the quarterback position is finding its, like, nadir, like its apex. Like, I don't know how much more you can get out of the position, and we'll see.
Steve, there's obviously so much talk about where the Niners are going, and I think it's pretty clear from just kind of reading the tea leaves that, I mean, there are those who are saying, you know, bring Jimmy back, but it sounds like, you know, both sides would like to move on from the other. And there are two things out there that are interesting to me. One, there's seemingly all these whispers about Brady on retiring and wanting to play here. And then today, literally hours ago, there was odds that came out on if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play for the Packers next year, where is he going to play? And the Niners are at the top of the list at 3-1, you know, with the 3-1 odds. Would you endorse a late career flirtation with Brady or Rodgers, or is that, in your mind, is it Trey's time and they should just not think about those two guys and really just focus on getting Trey ready for week one?
Look, I to be intellectually honest, this is a time when if you have a veteran quarterback that's capable, and both Tom has shown, throw his stats up of this year, and you're like 40 years old, like, okay, let's take 10% off or 15% off of next year. Still leads the league, probably.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a quarterback like that, this is a team. Like, remember I said, you have an owner, you have to have a general manager, you have a coach, you have to have the help on the field. If I said, okay, which team for a quarterback has that? What's the number one, two, three, four teams in the league that have that? And the 49ers are right there. Like, if I'm Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or anybody, Trey Lance or Jimmy Garoppolo, I want to be here. I want to be there. Like, this is the place, right? There's maybe one or two other you might consider, but not really in the NFC. I don't want to go hang around with fight Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow and maybe Deshaun Watson, maybe Lamar Jackson. Like, AFC is, you know, all those guys claw at each other every year to try to get to the Super Bowl. In the NFC right now is where you, if you want to go to the Super Bowl and you want to, like, not be clawed at all the time, go stay in the NFC. So if I'm going to be in the NFC and I'm going to pick one of the 16 teams that's ready, if you had Rams just did it, so you're going to, by definition, but the 49ers are that team. So if you ask me that question, which you did, Larry, what I think about Tom Brady for one more year or Aaron Rodgers for a couple, 3 years, this team could go win three Super Bowls. Now, Trey Lance, we don't know. We don't, and Trey doesn't know. If Trey was ready, Trey would have played. Trey needs to get ready in this offseason. This needs to be the biggest boot camp effort in history to get him ready to be expansive. And what I told you when I said, well, we'd have to watch him go from 2 to 10, this fall is not going to go to 6 to 8 to 10. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a patient process, but we cannot wait for that. We've got to get, if that's what we're going to do, we got to get him ready, and then we got 6 months to do it. But if you're asking me what I think about Aaron Rodgers coming or Tom Brady, or Steve Young, like, I know.
Hey, Steve Young's
coming back.
I'm joking, but I'm joking like by six generations. What I'm saying is the 49ers are that team. So, yes. I'm not trying to encourage anything. I'm not trying to – but, yes, if I'm me, I'm going to – it's like, look, don't send me anywhere. This is the one – if I have a chance to be good or great – the number one place I can do is right here. Right. It's already been proven to me. So, but I guess they've decided to part. He's fine. If I'm Trey, 100,000%, I'm in every day. This is the place. I stuck around in 1988, 89, 90. Now, again, I didn't have the complete control, but I sort of could have agitated more because I'd been in Tampa Bay. And I knew if I could figure out a way to get on the field with this team, with these guys, with this coach, with this offense, oh, yes. And so that's why if you're Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers and that's the way they want to think about it, and you say, well, where would you go? Number one place is right now here, no question.
This is the point in our hang with Steve where In conjunction with Steve's Forever Young Foundation, we honor a Bay Area hero as the Forever Young Foundation Hero of the Week. Well, it's our last convo with Steve, and we thought we'd look back because this season we've recognized so many wonderful organizations here in the Bay Area, from mental health to food security to fire safety. We want to give one final shout out to all of the wonderful organizations that were Forever Young Foundation Heroes of the Week. So, the list: the San Jose Fire Department, Operation Access, Fit Kids, Bay Area Youth EMT Foundation, Larkin Street Youth Services, El Dorado County Fire Department, Hamilton Families, San Francisco Marin Food Bank, DABS Incorporated, Stand for Families Free of Violence, Bay Area's Children Association, Not in Our Town, Second Harvest Food Bank, Silicon Valley, Napa County Fire Department, Healthier Kids Foundation, the Tech Museum, Peninsula Bridge, Santa Clara Fire Safe Council, Part the Cloud, and Child Mind Institute. To check out all of our Forever Young Foundation heroes, go to KMBR.com/foreveryoung. Donate to these organizations. Donate your time. Donate your money. Support these organizations because, as we say every week at this time, Steve, these are great people doing great things, and they are out in the community providing necessary services. They should be supported, and they should be shouted out, and we're glad at least we could help out with the shout-out part.
And please remember, everybody, that we just plucked these guys out because of their in different areas. They're doing this kind of selfless, I call it a labor of love, right, where they're just out serving the community. But please know that there are 1,000 other groups that we could yell out as well. So it's not like this is an A-list. This is wonderful groups. But I know many, many other groups that are equally valuable and ready to be yelled at. We don't have enough weeks. You know, we wish we could yell at everybody that's doing this kind of service to the community. But the spirit of what we've done here together, guys, is to try to just elevate the conversation around the groups in the Bay Area that are making lives better for everybody else. So anyway, thanks, Rod, for doing that every week. And Tom and Larry and everyone at KMBR and the Forever Young Foundation, we're paying it forward, trying to, like, let's do it. So yep.
Make a difference. Well,
come back next week. We'll shout somebody else out.
You guys, we barely have enough to talk to when they're in the season. We would struggle.
Please.
You do not want my fifth man off the bench. I mean, sixth man off the bench for the Warriors.
Oh, trust me, we do. Trust me, we do. Okay, two things.
off the bench. That would be a real problem.
Two things before we let you go. Be completely honest. One, 5 years ago, do you think you could have? You think you could have played quarterback in the NFL if you'd have got yourself ready?
No, I don't think. I think what happens is
10 years ago.
There's no difference. The way I feel today is the way I felt 10 years ago. So that's no different. The difference is the ability to change direction. Like, you could go out and throw the ball and throw some balls in the flat and try to, but to change the direction and take the beating and get up and play in 7 days is the problem, right?
Yeah.
That's why your body just doesn't allow it. But can you go play a quarter and throw it around if you don't? No one hits you. You probably could pull it off. You know what I mean? But you can't. It's having. Think about the last play, Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFC Championship game. Think about the physical nature of that play where he gets spun around by Aaron Donald. He goes to the ground. He tries to flip it up. He gets face planted in the ground. Like, you can't. Once you age, you can't take that beating. You can stand there and throw it, if that was the game. If it was 7-on-7 in the beach, you know what I mean. I mean, I'm sure my arm's still not as strong, but you can't. You can't take the beating. You know, you can't take the change of direction. Like, everyone would pull. But everyone knows that you can. But Tom Brady is extending to a point where, with pliability and flexibility and kind of keeping your body together, 45 is the new. Well, I guess George Blanda proved that 45 was still possible, right? Wasn't he 46?
Right, right.
So I guess I think it's possible, mid-40s. But I always thought 47, I will tell you that when I played, and then the next few years, I'm like, I feel the same. And then at 47, I'm like, ooh, I don't feel the same.
It's a rough year, huh?
It's just all of a sudden, like, you just didn't recover. Like, I really did, for 4 or 5 years, I felt like I should have complained. I mean, I should have. And then 47's like, no, 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 no.
Yeah. Hey, when you pull muscle sleeping, that's when you're like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right.
We're good. Exactly. And then lastly, you were talking about, you know, waiting your chance. Be honest with this. When you're waiting to take over the 49ers, as good as that situation was, as much as a competitor as you were, if you had the chance to go somewhere else and play in a good situation, would you have?
I agitated in 80 after 80. And when George took over and told me to sit down and shut up, that's when I realized as much as I want to do it here and as much as, you know, that might not be possible, that's when those conversations started. And so for the next 2 years, every year there was a lot of under the covers conversation around, because I can control it. I was under contract, but I could agitate for it. Mm-hmm. And there was Al Davis once told me that he had it done. It was after the 89 season. It was, and they announced it internally on draft day. And then something, I don't know whatever ended up happening, didn't happen. And no one ever explained it to me, so I have no details. But I remember getting that call. And then after 89, there was another kind of foray into it. Because look, in the end, you know, Joe was MVP of the league. He was MVP of the Super Bowl. Like, I'm not an idiot. I don't just stand here forever. But that wasn't what I expected to have happen. But Joe was, like, expanding on his game, doing amazing things. I needed to play. I mean, I was just sitting like, well, I got to go. I get it. Let me go play. And so that was the hard part. And then when Joe couldn't, arm got hurt in 91, that gave me the opportunity to at least go play. And that solved it for a little while. And then, you know, off we go. So that's,
yeah.
But I have, to your point, Tom, everyone, you got to go play. I mean,
yeah.
Someone says, I mean, you can't stand when you're 25 or 26 and you're standing there. That's not cool. That's not going to work.
Have you ever late at night when you're just thinking about thoughts, have you ever envisioned an alternate universe? You wearing the silver and black?
Not really. No, I'm good. You know, like I think it had its, I would have jumped in and swam as fast as I could and done whatever I could. But I know the full measure of who I was as a player came out in San Francisco. It took some mm-hmm. time, but it came out. And it came out in a way that I couldn't imagine. And so I can only say how grateful I am to be able to watch and to learn and then to go do it. And I owe a lot of people a lot of thank yous for that. But
yeah.
San Francisco was one of five places in the league at that time where that could happen.
Your time in San Francisco made you a Hall of Famer or helped make you a Hall of Famer.
So many guys I talked to that are great players that never did get the chance because they were such crappy places.
You could have tutored Marinovic.
There you go.
Just think, you got your...
I retired as a 49er in the locker room for a reason, right?
So, right, yeah, there you go.
You got your Super Bowl. You live next to Zuckerberg. You get to come on the show with us every week. I mean, look, things couldn't have worked out any more beautifully for you.
Yeah, could have. We could have won some championship games and gotten more Super Bowls. I can tell you that right now.
So there it is. That's what I'm talking about. And I said the same thing to Brent Jones, and it doesn't matter. I didn't even have to bring it up. The tip-top of the athletic world, and even not even the tip top, just you make it to the NBA, NFL, baseball, whatever, and you're in the top league. I guarantee you, everybody I talk to will say the losses hurt more than the wins are joyous. They remember those more because when you win, you feel like I put in the work, I deserve this. We're a good team. We're better than them. We should have beaten them. If you lose, you keep thinking, well, how did we do that? Why did I do this? Why did that guy do this? How did we get here? It's just, it's amazing to me that guys don't let it go. And I don't let mine go. I still think about losing to Oklahoma in the Final Four. That was like 40 years ago at that game, and I still can't believe we lost that game. We lost three games that year. We were number one in the nation that year. We had a great year, but that game, I have a hard time thinking about it. And if you talk to most athletes, they will tell you the same thing. The wins, they feel like, well, we earned those ones. The losses, you feel like, what in the hell happened?
Well, not only that, in 92 in the Cowboys game, I remember looking over and basically dealing with Charles Haley for 60 minutes and saying to myself,
why?
What strange world am I living in that my guy is sitting over there just torturing me? It'll be like Bryant Young next year, or like anybody, maybe like Aaron Donald next year, staring at Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford, like, wait, what alternate universe?
Yeah.
What kind of sorcery am I dealing with?
Aaron Donald in a Niner uniform harassing Matthew Stafford. Yeah.
Thank you, Carmen. Right. You know.
No, look, you asked me what my visceral reaction is, and that's where I go. I go to that on the field, staring down Charles Haley, going, "All right, let's go do this."
Hey, Steve, as always, we love you. We love having you on. It's so much fun. It's fun talking football with you, amongst other things. It's fun shouting out the people that deserve it every single show. So it's just our Wednesdays for us are such a treat during the football season. We miss talking during the off season. I'm sure we'll hook up again next year, but we just want to say thank you so much for coming on. And look, we always say, kind of, it's not flippantly, but we just throw it out there. Number 8, the Hall of Famer. I mean, you're a Hall of Famer, and I know a lot of people, a lot of Hall of Famers that go on radio shows and mail it in. You never mail it in. You're always engaged. You always love being here, and we love that about you, that you come on with us every single week and talk football.
Family. It's family with you guys. I love you guys. It's fun to it's engaging. To me, cathartic. It's a chance to talk about things that are important to me and give me a connection to what I did as we've talked about many times. When you retire, you fall off a cliff. And the reason that you fall off a cliff, that the thing that you love so desperately was the idea that it took every bit of yourself to be good or great. And even, you know, as much as I have the sublime joy of family and everything else, nothing takes every inch of yourself than like football. And so that's what you miss. And so it's kind of it's a connection. And it's a connection to the Bay Area. I really do feel, as a 49er, like I don't want to be a homer because I want to be honest with everybody, but I have a lot of emotion around the 49ers and how the culture of the 49ers and what they've recreated now in these last 4 or 5 years that is so much like, feels like what we did, and I want that success for them. And so I hope that everything we do on this show is pushing for that, you know, to be a small little piece to the success that they could have by, you know, calling out the good and the bad and the ugly so that we can move forward. So I love it. I love the chance to do it. And you guys know it's a labor of love because we don't really trade much other than the shout outs to the foundation, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's a fun thing for me, and just know that I'll miss not chatting with you guys every Wednesday. So anyway,
well, we appreciate it. If Barb gets tired of you talking about free agency, you got our number.
Thanks again, Steve. We really appreciate it, man.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Steve. Take it easy, man.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamin's podcast wherever you listen.